Welcome to the show. I'm Jordan Harbinger. As always, I'm here with my producer, Jason DeFilippo. You already know that relationships are your most important asset, but what are you actually doing about it? It's possible to implement a specific strategy around your relationships that can make them deeper, more productive, and ultimately more beneficial. Zvi Band is the founder and CEO of Contactually. It's a relationship-centric CRM that I've been using for years to maintain hundreds, possibly thousands, of important relationships, which helped us rebuild the business from zero starting last year in 2018. And I know you've heard me talk about the software before. It's called Contactually. I've used this for a long time to great effect, and Zvi is the creator of this. And I thought I'd have him on the show because he's basically this introverted software developer who has the... He was the recipient of amazing experiences and opportunities purely by having the right relationships and reputation. And today, we'll cover some ground and dive into how and why relationships decay, especially in this day and age. We'll also discuss why and how to prioritize your relationships and not merely organize them. And I also want to pop the bubble and clarify how we can easily add value to our network and relationships. I know people say, add value, gotta add value all the time, and people don't really explain what that means. And I also cover a ton of that at a granular level in our 6-minute networking course as well. And speaking of 6-minute networking, you can go and grab that. It is free over at jordanharbinger.com/course. And we're taking you through a lot of drills and exercises to help you expand your network. Make sure you're engaging it in just 6 minutes per day. Again, that's free at jordanharbinger.com/course. All right, here's Zvi Band. Zvi, I talk about networking a lot, and I use your product a lot, Contactually, and so I was kind of thrilled when I heard that you were going to write a book. Normally, I wouldn't start with someone's story, especially if it's about networking, but you and I have kind of this shared background in a way where the network was what saved our asses, and so I think that's a good place to start with this, because I think a lot of people go, oh yeah, I need to do more networking, I need to know how to do this, I need to know how to do this and that better. Having bounced back from the bottom because of the network, I think is a great way to start an episode to highlight the importance of this, and then get into the tactics.
Yeah, absolutely, and you're right, I probably would have pictured myself to be the last person to build a company that was exclusively around relationship building, let alone write a book about the tactics and strategies behind it. When I first graduated college, I remembered when I started my job, they gave me this advice of like, oh, you should go out and network with other employees. And I was like, yeah, that sounds like a terrible idea. I'm not going to do that. But as it turns out, you know, I ended up building that amazing skill set. You know, I didn't really call it networking. It was more just, I was interested in other things beyond what my job offered. There was a growing startup scene here in DC. I didn't want to work for a big company forever as I kind of came to learn. So I wanted to learn more about startups. And so I didn't really know how to build, you know, a network, but I knew how to make friends. So I started showing up at these places where a lot of people that I wanted to work with were hanging out, and started just doing what I did, just walked into a room and just, you know, made a beeline to the first person that was standing alone and just made friends with them and repeated that over and over again. And that ended up building an amazing network that served me in amazing ways, that especially at times when I really, really needed it.
Yeah, I like the idea that networks are there to save your butt. The problem is a lot of people try to create a network when their butt needs saved, and that's not going to work. You know, we always say dig the well before you're thirsty, because we jacked that fancy phrase from Harvey McKay. And it sounds like your start was a little rocky. I mean, I know you had a job you didn't like, and then you had some illness in the family, and it was just like a whole stress bomb. And you were able to escape because of the relationships that you had built.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is back in 2007, 2008-ish. You know, I was working for a job I didn't like. I moved to a startup that ended up being a really bad decision, just, you know, not necessarily the best environment for me. Quit that in the middle of the night and said, I have no idea what I'm going to do next, but I guess I'll just start kind of taking some random gigs here and there. Almost at the exact same day, my father had, you know, had cancer for the past 9 years. Turns out he needed to go to the hospital for surgery and would spend the next 4 months in and out of different hospitals and surgery and, you know, and care centers, you know, over time. And this also happened to be, I look back and the day I actually incorporated my company was the day that the Federal Reserve officially declared that we had been in a recession. So kind of when you pile that all together, yeah, it seems like that was pretty much the absolute worst thing that could happen at any one point in time. But I did what I think anyone would do, which is just start firing off emails to anyone that I knew and, you know, and phone calls and text messages saying, hey, you know, I'm on the market right now. I'm a free agent. Just, you know, tell me like, you know, just if you have any work for me or have any leads of jobs, please let me know. And within the first couple of days, you know, I got an email, like it was, you know, first off saying, hey, my dad's construction company needs a new website. You know, hey, like I am pitching on a project for Microsoft. Do you think you can help me out? Hey, my design firm is getting, you know, is having trouble building out this website. Could you help out? And so obviously start off with these really small gigs, but I was amazed that, you know, again, it wasn't my network back then as I considered. It was just people I knew end up really coming to my aid in amazing ways and kept on repeating over and over again for years to come.
So let me dissect this a little bit, because I think I don't want people to be like, great, so I don't like my job, I'm going to quit, and then I'll just email people and I'll find jobs. There's a lot that happened here that's not exactly going to play out like that. So first of all, you quitting a job in the middle, or the beginning, I should say, of a recession, spur of the moment in kind of an impulsive way, not recommended, right? Like, you wouldn't do that again, given the option, correct?
You know, maybe not. Like, I think I didn't have enough of a worldview to realize like how bad the economy was and how that would factor into my jobs. You know, I do believe that, and I strongly believe that everyone should wake up in the morning and decide whether or not they want to go into work that day. And for us, you know, for me, I had too many days where I was like, I don't think I can get out of bed. And so, yeah, you know, there ended up being kind of enough of a dire situation that it was a, you know, not a rage quit, but like, hey, put in 2 weeks notice, you know, close my email and, you know, not check it for, you know, another couple of weeks while I let the dust settle. It ended up being a pretty rough experience. But yeah, I mean, I do strongly advise people now that, you know, you should always make sure you have your feelers open. Honestly, even for our employees, you know, we're totally fine with them, you know, occasionally taking the call with a recruiter, taking, you know, maybe doing an interview or two, just to confirm that this is the right thing for them. You know, just keep building that network and, you know, making sure your options are open.
You say everyone should decide in the morning whether or not they should go into work that day. And I don't mean to harp on the whole quitting the job thing, but what do you mean by that? Because what I'm trying to avoid is people being like, you know, I've had a rough week, I don't want to keep doing this job. There's got to be a thought process that goes into this, because there's, and I got to call this out and correct me if I'm wrong, but there's an element of luck that went into you finding other gigs right away that a lot of people might not have.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, answering that question first, I think there's definitely an aspect of luck, absolutely. But, you know, one of the concepts that we very much believe in is that luck surface area, right? It's how do you increase the number of chances that you have to get lucky? And for me, that was just knowing a lot of people who happen to work in interesting companies and design firms and startups and things like that. So yeah, like I was definitely lucky to, for example, get connected to someone who the day before had just closed on a round of funding and needed a CTO to kind of fill in for them. You know, that was a lucky moment, but there's a lot of work that went into that luck, if that makes sense.
It does. And we'll talk about what that work looks like and how people can do that. In fact, sneak preview, I do the 6-minute networking course that replaces my old level one, and you know all about this, V, but
yep.
Essentially one of the exercises in there is called Layoff Lifelines, and it's making a list of the, I don't know, 10 or 15 people whose advice you would seek if you got laid off today or your business implodes, and then reaching out to those people now while you don't need anything. Because there's something to be said for your luck surface area was you'd had a bunch of people in mind, you reached out to those people. They didn't say, who are you? Or, hey, I haven't talked to you in 10 years. Why are you emailing me? You had, by the grace of whatever, actually been strong enough connected to those people that they replied, and some of them had work for you to do. Many people do not have this. They have not done any work on their network. They've been heads down networking inter-office or whatever, or working on the relationships at work, or freelancing from home and don't have the ability, whatever excuse you know you can insert here. People have not done any work to create that or those sets of relationships. And so, yes, creating that luck surface area is kind of what networking is all about in the first place. Having all those relationships, people go, how did you get that opportunity where you went and you got flown in a jet, or you ended up going to this weird country with this set of really cool people? That's luck surface area. That's, hey, Jordan, long shot here, but do you want to go to Bhutan and have meetings with all these cool people? And the reason that they thought of me was because I texted the guy last week and was like, hey, you're on my mind, or whatever. And we'll get into those tactics in a bit. That's increasing that surface area for luck. But I want to highlight this because I think a lot of people are going, great, I hate my job, I'm going to quit, and then what I'll do is I'll sit down and blast everybody who's in my Gmail contacts and I'll be fine. And that's kind of not true.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. You know, what I went through was a do not repeat this at home. And, you know, when we talk to our employees and we talk to other people, yeah, I do very much strongly believe that you have to make that decision that morning of whether you go into work or not. And the default answer should be yes, you know, if for no other reason than like, you went in yesterday, you want to make sure you have a career. It doesn't look good to just up and quit because you had a bad meeting the day before. But if you find yourself just, you know, day in, day out, realizing that, hey, I don't have the passion and the fire, that I'm not excited about what I do, and this isn't really meeting my needs, whether the needs for my family, the needs for my career, I do think it's worth, you know, just that check to say, hey, is this the right thing? And is there something else out there? And to your point, that's where, you know, you should tap into the relationships you already have or start building those relationships, right? You know, maybe it is putting a 2-year timeline to say, hey, sometime over the next 2 years, I want to switch jobs or switch careers. You know, who are the people I can meet? Who are the relationships I can build, you know, that work really well? You know, I equate this a lot to, you know, at Contactually, we raised $12 million in venture capital. And one of the key mantras is that investors invest in lines, not dots. So if I showed up at your door, Jordan, and said, hey, you know, give me $100,000, you'd be like, who are you? Who's your company? I have no idea why I should trust you or believe in you. But if I'd gotten to know you when we were a seed stage company and shared with you what we're doing and got your advice and stayed in touch with you over time, and you could see the line of, you know, the line of the company start to slope upwards and really start to build momentum, by the time that point comes out where I'm making that ask, then all right, you have that context. I think it's the same in relationships or careers as well, right? You know, we're all on a, you know, we're all on a line, whether looking backwards at our past or looking forwards at our future trajectory. And it's a matter of being able to share that context with people that we know.
Agree. And I think I've probably told the story enough on the show, but my network was the single number one with a bullet reason why I was able to leave another company in early 2018, just over a year ago, and then come back with the Jordan Harbinger show and end up, you know, most downloaded new show of 2018 and being more profitable than the old company ever was. It's kind of a miracle, honestly. And so in the miracle, what's responsible for that is the fact that I had done all of that digging and increased that surface area, increased those relationships, and everything that we're talking about here today and in the 6-minute networking course, which, by the way, people can find, and there's plenty of info on Contactually in that as well, our 6-minute networking course, jordanharbinger.com/course, where we teach a lot of this networking stuff in course format. And I want to talk as well about the idea of having the right people behind you, because it's not just knowing the right people externally and having that network. I think people don't think about their team as a network. They don't think about their staff, their employees, their family. You know, part of the rise, of course, was having people like Jason, who's hopefully still with us, listening and patting himself on the back. But you get that because you put these networking concepts into action with those that are close to you, not just random connections that are far away from you. And I think a lot of people think of networking as reaching out to random people that you don't know, when really you're supposed to be doing this with everyone.
Yeah, and I think that's probably one of the bigger falsehoods around networking, that networking is all about generating net new relationships. And really, the key aspects around relationship marketing, and that's what we really focus on in the book, is not how to work a room, not how to cold email people, but it's how do you maintain and increase the value of the relationships that you already have. So you're right, with your employees, right? You know, and the team around you, again, you know, they're human beings, just like the business development target that you have or the hiring manager at a company you want to work for. They have needs too. And so, you know, again, lifetime employment doesn't really happen anymore, right? We're not going to be in the same jobs for the rest of our lives. And so therefore, the people that work for us aren't going to be there either. So, you know, we're very honest and we say, hey, let's be clear. You're probably going to work at this company for maybe 3 to 5 years, hopefully a little bit more, hopefully not less than that. But that's a relationship for 3 to 5 years. So, and we really hone in on that relationship and we think about, well, what does this person want out of it? What are their problems? What are they trying to achieve in the next year? And how can we help with that? So it goes beyond just kind of making sure they know what they're doing, but it's understanding their home life. It's understanding the challenge they face. You know, I was meeting with an employee this morning and they were talking around how one of their big goals is they need to get out of debt in the next couple of years with all their student debt. Well, how can we help and help guide them in some way beyond just giving them a paycheck? Because that's the kind of stuff that creates loyalty for life.
You're listening to The Jordan Harbinger Show with our guest, Zvi Band. We'll be back right after this.
This episode is sponsored in part by HostGator.
Bar Rescue's John Taffer was on the show recently talking about how he encounters potentially successful people all the time who have one thing in common. They're overachievers in the art of rationalizing excuses. And if you have a business or brand to promote, what excuses have been keeping you from making your own website? There's good news. HostGator can refute those excuses. Think it's too expensive? HostGator's plans start at less than $3 a month. Don't have an IT staff for maintenance? HostGator does. Don't think you're creative enough to design it? HostGator makes your site look professional in minutes. Plus, HostGator's got a much more gentle touch than John Taffer's tough talk. That's why we recommend HostGator's website builder. HostGator allows you to choose from over 100 mobile-friendly templates so your site will look great on any device. Smartphones, tablets, desktops, you get it. And if you want to use WordPress for your site, it only takes one click. Many, many add-on options like PayPal and SEO, and you also get a guaranteed 99.9% uptime, and HostGator's support team is there to help you with any issues you experience 24/7, 365. And don't worry about it breaking the bank either. HostGator's giving our wonderful listeners up to 62% off all packages for new users with a 45-day complete money-back guarantee. So go to HostGator.com/Jordan right now to sign up. That's HostGator.com/Jordan. Get that website today.
This episode is also sponsored by Intuit.
Whether you're a small business owner, a mother, or a podcast host like we are, all of us are working towards a prosperous future. But prosperity doesn't mean the same thing to everyone. For some, it's planning for retirement. For others, it's buying a home and starting a college savings. And for others, it's finally getting the financial freedom to take that long-awaited trip to Hawaii. Now, as you sit and think about your personal vision of prosperity, you may also be thinking about all the time and money obstacles that stand in your way. Intuit is here to give you the confidence to pursue your goals with financial tools that help power prosperity. Join the millions of people who are managing their finances with QuickBooks, TurboTax, or Mint, and turn your vision into reality. Everyone deserves the chance to prosper, and with Intuit, you could get started on your path to success now. Learn more at Intuit.com. Intuit, powering prosperity. Don't forget we have a worksheet for today's episode, so you can make sure you solidify your understanding of the key takeaways from Zvi Band. That link is in the show notes at jordanharbinger.com/podcast. Thanks for listening and supporting the show. To learn more about our sponsors and get links to all the great discounts you just heard, visit jordanharbinger.com/deals. If you'd like some tips on how to subscribe to the show, just go to jordanharbinger.com/subscribe. Now back to our show with Zvi Band.
Let's talk a little bit about how and why relationships decay, because we talk about Dunbar's number and things like that, where we can only... You know, the experts are like, we can only know 150 people. We can only have 150 people in the tribe or something like that. Our minds are not very good at maintaining large social networks, which is fine if you grew up in a small town in Montana in the 60s and 70s. You knew all the people around your age and you kind of knew who their parents were. And that was good enough. You know, you were solid. Good. You're going to work at the local whatever and you're good. Now, with internet, we kind of have this problem that we're not evolved to handle.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, let's face it, there's this common knowledge that we all know that we forget things, especially over time. And so I encounter this, in my own career, which is one of the reasons why I created Contactually, where computers can't really forget things. You know, I would meet someone for coffee and then 2 weeks later, not only forget the details about them, but even forget who I'm meeting with, right? You know, try and think back to what you had for breakfast 2 weeks ago. And most likely you're not going to know. And you're going to be thinking around, well, who else did I meet with that day? So it's the same thing. So yeah, I mean, there's, human beings have always been faced with, the issue of memory decay. It's even being more and more accelerated right now with the amount of information being thrown at us. And we're always being interrupted with new information and new people coming in. You know, I have, probably like many others, a couple thousand inbound LinkedIn requests that I haven't responded to. And so we're all forced around, quote, building relationships and connections. But the problem is that's causing us to feel even weaker and weaker. You know, one of the tests that we always say, and, your listeners should try this today is, open up LinkedIn and, go through all of your connections and think of how many people there you actually know. And even worse yet, think of how many people that, you know well enough that if they reached out and asked you for $20, you'd give it to them.
Yeah, that number is significantly smaller than the total number of contacts that I have, for sure, in LinkedIn or anywhere for that matter. So, yeah, what you're illustrating is that we have a lot of really weak contacts that we couldn't even, if you can't lend or borrow $20 from somebody, how useful is that connection, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, again, we see all the stats, all the same statistics around, around loneliness in the world, right? Especially with social media where everyone's broadcasting their best selves and no one's really kind of going deep. I think there's a report by Cigna that came out last year that, of a study of 20,000 Americans, nearly half said they're lonely. That's kind of scary in a world where we could and should be more connected than ever. We actually feel less and less connected. And, again, that's not just on the personal spectrum, but that's professionally as well. When, there are so many, it's easy to reach out to anyone. It's easy to respond to anyone. That means it's also harder for us to figure out, well, who should I be working with? Who should I be responding? Who am I not talking to today that I, that I should today?
Yeah, I think that's important. I also found it fascinating that our brains have a smaller neocortex than apes. And so apes had larger networks. So basically, apes are better than humans at networking, which kind of checks out, jibes with my experience.
Yeah, I mean, but listen, we can't be all doom and gloom. I mean, the great thing, out there is that, with technology and the strategies, including kind of, the book we have coming out and your course, there is a solution. I think the challenge is that people need to treat this not as a, oh yeah, I want to be better at networking. I want to be better at relationships or things like that, but it has to be an actual strategy that they implement today.
Yeah, agree. And time decay theory, essentially that memories dull as time passes. We have to reinforce those connections. So using tools like 6-Minute Networking, using tools like Contactually is a great way to do that. Of course, we can do that using other systems as well, like scrolling to the bottom of our text messages and texting old contacts. I think it's important to note, though, that just because someone's fresh in our mind doesn't mean we're fresh in theirs, if that makes sense. So we have to be re-engaging even if we feel closer to that person, because we don't necessarily know if that's reciprocated. And I found that to be true for me over time. A lot of people would be like, hey, great meeting you last week. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I went to a conference since then, so I have no clue who this is. But they may have met two people last week and I was one of them, where I might have met like 200 people last week and they were one of them, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. And I think that's why we're always struggling to rebuild that social context between each other. You know, so, yeah, I think, you know, it's pretty safe that unless you know that person so incredibly well, you know, when you're reaching out, you know, you have to do those things sometimes that, you know, allow you to rebuild that context. Like even just casually like, hey, Jordan, it's really great meeting you at that conference last week. Or, you know, I really appreciated you answering that question for me about blah, blah, blah. And that will hopefully help establish, you know, or reestablish that social object between you two. That's why, again, one of the key parts of our strategy is to talk about intelligence. You know, even if it's around people you know, you know, building up that set of intelligence that of what people are really interested in, what people are really excited about, what their challenges are, even their kids' names, their hobbies, you know, what their spouse does for a living. You know, understanding all of those things can be so important to make sure that you maintain the context of that relationship together.
Yeah, this sounds, people are going, oh, great. So follow up with a simple comment. I already knew that. It's different because most people who are following up are sending an email like, it's great to meet you last week. They're not saying anything of more substance like, hey, it was great meeting you last week. I saw your talk at this conference and your point about X was really interesting. I hadn't thought of it that way. The more specific, the better, because then I'm able to attribute something specific. Like, that's the guy who was at my talk about podcast advertising in the next 10 years, not some guy I met next week. So it's not just following up generally, it's following up as specifically as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's why every interaction should be meaningful, relevant, and authentic. So that means, you know, the relevant is, yeah, like, all right, like, why should you know this person? Like, why should this person matter? Why does this relation matter? It's really kind of giving that relevance. But authenticity is obviously at the core of it. You know, some people try and be a little bit too exacting and almost giving like a, you know, some people gave me like a transcript of our last conversation as a way to like jog my memory. You know, that's the kind of stuff that comes off as overly mechanical. And at the end of the day, you know, we're human beings and we want to relate to people authentically. So as long as we maintain the authenticity throughout it, you know, we're going to be in good shape.
Yeah, I think it goes beyond authenticity, though, right? It goes into specificity, and it goes into realizing that the value of the network, the people in the network are valuable, and not cheapening it by making it or the people in it transactional. Because I think a lot of people will go, okay, great, I'm following up specifically, but I'm following up specifically in that I'm asking for something that I want. And I want to cover this, at least touch on this, because it does feel icky to all of the sudden put a value on a relationship. But we also have to balance that with not treating networking as some kind of New Year's resolution that we do for 2 weeks and then forget about it, right? So I think a lot of people will fall short on improving their relationships because they don't make it specific, but on the other hand, they're making things transactional. How can we balance that? How can we avoid that pitfall?
Yeah, I think it's rooted in this belief that people do business with people they know. And so, you know, your relationship building is not just about like, hey, you just want them to, you know, like you enough that they're going to think about you like, you know, the next time they're ready to transact. It is all also about like, hey, you want to work with people that you know and like. You know, I know a lot of, you know, I know a lot of people that have had their clients, you know, attend their wedding, right? You know, and, you know, be like one actually like, you know, had one of their clients be the godfather of the kids because they built that type of relationship. It's not that we need to go that extreme, but I got this career advice early on that a business is made, you know, not as much by people you work with, but by the people that you don't work with. And so you want to make sure that you're maintaining those relationships with the people that are most interesting and exciting for you. And that's why that kind of opens yourself up to have a little bit more of an authentic relationship. You know, I think, you know, per that point, you know, we're not necessarily really fishing for jobs every time we're reaching out. What we're doing is we're making sure we maintain a relationship because we like them, because we care about them, and we believe that we can provide value from them. So at some point, you know, when they're ready for something that we provide, that they think of us. right? Back when I was running a consulting firm, again, I was building relationships with past clients and with entrepreneurs and startups and design firms. And if I were to ping them saying, hey, do you have any jobs for me today? Hey, do you have any jobs for me today? Yeah, that'd be really annoying. And they'd, you know, and they'd send me packing. Instead, what I would do is, you know, I was building a relationship. I was sharing what I was working on. I was really genuinely interested in their business because I cared about them and I wanted them to be successful. And as part of that caring, you know, they'd reach out to me from time to time saying, hey, Zvi, you know, we have this problem or we have this project or, you know, a developer just quit. Can you kind of help fill in? And that would be my opening. So, you know, I truly believe that relationship building is not about, you know, kind of, you know, keep sending pings to your network, hoping for something to come back. But instead, it's maintaining, again, that luck surface area. So when something strikes, you're ready to go and they think of you.
Yes, that I can appreciate.
You're listening to The Jordan Harbinger Show with our guest, Zvi Band. We'll be right back after this.
This episode is sponsored in part by Trip Actions. There's a reason that half of business travelers do not use their company's chosen travel management platform. Booking business travel is ridiculously outdated. It's time-consuming. It's costly. I remember when I was, back when I was a lawyer a lifetime ago, and things haven't changed much since then, by the way, I had one company that helped me get places for recruiting efforts and one company that helped us get places for the job stuff and one company that helped us for, like, non-client related travel, and one flight would get canceled and you'd call three companies and hold and you'd find out it wasn't even one of them. It was just totally insane. And I remember renting a car and driving back to Detroit from New York because it was probably faster than staying on hold with everybody. So if you're frustrated with your company's travel management program or lack thereof, look into Trip Actions. It takes a lot of the pain out of it. The way that they've set this up is pretty nice. They've got 24/7 proactive support around the globe, and there's incentives for employees, of course, to save on travel expenses. And companies large and small see over 90% adoption, and they save up to 34% on travel spend when they use Trip Actions as well. So you've got Lyft, Sara Lee's Frozen Bakery. They trust Trip Actions with their business travel. And what I love about this is they'll send you push notifications while you're at the gate before the airlines even announce a flight delay or a cancellation. And then they'll connect you to an agent who's local to you, your country, you know, native speaker of English or like in the country of note. And then they'll get you rebooked. They don't just say like, yeah, call United. Good luck, buddy. So, Jason, tell them how to get Trip Actions.
Reshape your company's business travel today with Trip Actions. Go to tripactions.com/Jordan. Complete a 30-minute demo with a Trip Actions account executive, and you'll get a $100 Amazon gift card. But it's this month only. tripactions.com/Jordan for a free demo and a $100 Amazon gift card. That's tripactions.com/Jordan.
This episode is also sponsored by Ship. Now, this is a dating app, and I know you're thinking, like, Jordan, you're married. You're unqualified to talk about this. What I love about this is, of course, I'm happily married to Jen. I never really got the chance to use a lot of dating apps, so I've got some FOMO about that. But also, I like picking people for others, obviously. And that's kind of why we're stoked about Ship. This is a new dating app that lets you set up your friends and of course, your family. So the way that it works is if you're single, you sign up, you invite your friends to join your crew. If you're not single, you just sign up and you invite a single friend that you want to find matches for. And you start looking for matches for yourself, whatever, for your friend. And the best part is there's a group chat. So, of course, you know, you're seeing the profiles that other people are doing and you can see what they're looking at. You can look at people's profiles together. You can strategize on how to set this all up. And my wife and I are using Ship to set up my brother-in-law. And it's really funny to see who my wife likes for him versus who I like for him, because she's like looking at the profile and dissecting every line. And I'm just like, hot, hot. Not, you know, I'm just like swipe left, swipe right.
So much thought put into it.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole. I mean, I'm just picking, you know, this is just pure vicarious living. And it's really fun. Dating is more fun if you do it with friends. And you can download Ship for free. GetShipped.com/Jordan. That's GetShipped.com/Jordan. And start today. I think this is a fun app, especially for us married folk who are like, oh, let me give you a bunch of dates to go on so that I can hear all about them. GetShipped.com/Jordan.
Thanks for listening and supporting the show. Your support of our advertisers is what keeps us on the air. And to learn more and get links to all the great discounts you just heard, visit jordanharbinger.com/deals. And don't forget the worksheet for today's episode. That link is in the show notes at jordanharbinger.com/podcast. And if you're listening to the show on the Overcast player on iOS, please click that little star button next to the episode. It really helps us out. And now for the conclusion of our show with Zvi Band.
Something that I also find fascinating that you brought up pre-show was none of this is taught in business or law school. And it's so funny because I remember talking with a bunch of business school students. I think I've told this anecdote on the show before, but I was talking with a bunch of Michigan business students. Michigan's one of the top business schools in the nation. And I was like, hey, you know, let me come in while I'm here in Michigan and I'll give a talk about networking. It's my alma mater, Michigan is, and I'll do a talk at the law school as well. And law school was like, great, come on in. We really need this. And then I was in the room and I remember the law school was like, yeah, you know, we could only get like one club to do this. So we're just going to record it. And I thought like, okay, so AKA no one showed up, failure of promotion. And then the B school student said, no, you know, we're already pretty social. None of us really need this. And I remember a couple of months after that getting emailed by the B school and they said, we desperately need someone to teach networking because this is our single point, biggest failure point of all of our graduates is the network. And I thought, how funny. All these professors and the career counselors and the recruiters and everybody who works there in the job, you know, where the rubber meets the road area, they were all like, ugh, the networking is just not happening among the students. And all the students were like, we're so good at this. We don't even need to be instructed. And the truth is, this isn't taught in business or law school. But then when you get to, let's say, a law firm, the people that make the most money, that have the most job security, that are able to choose which projects they work on, that have the choicest opportunities, they're the rainmakers. They're the people that generate business. And the way that they do that is they use these types of networking skills. And yet, you'll find that even among those firms that have virtually unlimited resources for training and development, they don't teach this. And I found that the reason, now that I'm older and I can ask law partners because I have direct access to them, the reason is because they honestly, most people do not believe this can be taught. They think you've got certain people that are good at it and certain people that aren't. And the ones that aren't good at it, they just come in and they keep their head down and they do the work. And the ones that are, well, we rely on them for business. So pay them 10 times as much and make them a partner, you know, a decade earlier than everyone else.
Yeah. And that's, you know, you're right. And I'm glad you brought up the, you know, the law profession as an example. I've talked to a lot of lawyers who have this kind of tinfoil hat belief that the reason it's not taught is because, you know, the senior partners only want like a few people to figure it out, right? You know, it's kind of a survival of the fittest that, you know, a few people figure out how to become rainmakers and they need all these kind of, you know, lower level attorneys to kind of actually do the work for them. I don't really believe it. Believe that's the case.
No, me neither. There's no way any boss is like, I want a limited number of people generating business so that if they leave, I'm screwed. That's what I want. No way.
Yeah, I think the bigger issue is that this is kind of a challenge with just kind of, you know, our approach to education as a whole is that we spend so much time focusing on the hard skills, not the soft skills. So, for example, you know, I went to school for computer science and economics, and, you know, in computer science is all about algorithms and game theory and, you know, program language A and program language B and, you know, and how to solve this problem, this challenge. But when you get in the real world, you know, those challenges are nothing compared to how do you work in a team? You know, how do you deal with, you know, executives and, you know, build empathy with users and build the right product and test and iterate and refine? And that's almost never taught these days. So, you know, I think, you know, the big challenge out there, even when it came to networking, is that there are so many people that know what to do, that have figured out how to build and strengthen deep relationships, but it's all via years and years of trial and error. And when I ask them, even just, you know, all right, well, how would you teach someone how to learn now? They'd say, I don't really know. And that's honestly one of the reasons why we decided to write a book over the past couple of years, is because we didn't see anyone really out there teaching. So how do you build a network?
Yeah. And one of the first principles of building and maintaining relationships and networks is consistency. And that's something we've harped on quite a bit. And in 6-minute networking, it's kind of the foundation of that. The whole point is you spend 6 minutes a day doing it instead of spending 6 days doing it when you get fired in a few years, or when you have a crisis in your life and then you're just doing nothing but that. But relationship marketing or creating consistency in networking as a habit, you can see the impact of relationships in the rearview mirror, but it's really hard to see, understand, realize any short-term payoff without being transactional, right? Like, you need something, you email people, you get a job. Oh, great, I should do this more often, except I don't need a job, so you never do it again. We're really stuck in this, as you put it pre-show, tyranny of the urgent, where, look, I've got email, I've got calendar appointments, there's a push notification about this payment thing, I got instant messengers on whatever, text, Facebook, whatever. I'm losing track of what's urgent, let alone what's actually important. So we have to be intentional about getting important tasks done, not just urgent things, not just stuff that's in our face, not just the next meeting, but block the time off on our calendar. I don't know, a reward mechanism maybe. What do you do to maintain consistency? Because for me, I actually block off, let's say, an hour on Monday for contactually where I go through and email people I haven't talked to in a long time. But I'm also doing the 6 minute networking stuff where every day I'm texting people in the morning, I'm shooting emails in the morning, I'm blocking off that time to do it, because otherwise I know it won't get done. It's like going to the gym. I don't really want to go, right? I have to. And if I don't, over time, I certainly look like I haven't been. But that's the same thing with networking and relationship development. You know, what else are you doing to generate consistency?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you hit the nail on the head right there when you gave that gym analogy, right? You know, just like working out in the gym every day, you know, won't make us feel better tomorrow or the day after. In fact, most of the times it makes us feel worse. But, you know, years down the line, it makes us feel better. We're fit, you know, we live longer lives. But when I choose that versus, you know, sitting on the couch eating Netflix and watching ice cream, well, what's going to bring me more value in the short term, right? And so as human beings, you know, we're more wired for those short-term gains rather than those long-term gains. And that's honestly the root of our issue. If that weren't the case, then yeah, of course, you know, everyone would be in the gym for half an hour in the morning and half an hour in the evening. And, you know, no one would ever eat McDonald's anymore because, you know, we'd all just be eating like salads and lean protein all day long. But the truth is, no, like we're wired for those short terms. And, you know, with relationships, again, the things that will net benefits for us, they will change our lives amazingly, as we've all seen looking backwards, but those won't net results for years to come. And that's really, again, the case seen time and time again. So the question we have to ask ourselves is, how do we hack our minds or hack our processes so we're able to do things in the short term that will benefit us for the long term? So, you know, a couple of the tricks. Yeah, I do really love the idea of time blocking. That's probably the most effective thing if you are a calendar-driven person, to have that calendar in place to be able to say, all right, this is the time of day where I'm not gonna answer the phone, I'm not gonna answer email. All I'm gonna do is be proactive with my relationships rather than reacting to whatever push notification is sent at me. The other trick that we find works pretty well is to actually, you know, if you're looking and if your mind is wired for a short-term reward, then great. Then give yourself that short-term reward, right? Say, hey, if I reach out to 10 people this morning, then great. I'm going to go down the street and, you know, get that really full fat, you know, mocha frappuccino or something like that. You know, reward yourself for the work that you've done. And that will kind of trick your brain to say, all right, cool. I did something and I got a reward. Now that reward might be false compared to the real reward that's years down the line, but doing things like that can really work. Other things, you know, consider having an accountability coach. So I have an accountability coach that calls me every Thursday afternoon and will yell at me if I don't do the task that I've laid out. Other things that you can think about is, you know, there is this concept of tiny habits by a behavioral scientist named BJ Fogg. You know, the whole idea is connect something you're already doing with a habit you want to build. So after I open my laptop in the morning, the very first thing I do is I'm going to, you know, send two emails to people I wouldn't otherwise. So there are a number of hacks, but it's all about tricking your brain, for lack of a better term, to do something that won't net you results now, but will pay off in dividends later on down the line.
Yes, this I can absolutely understand. I think creating those habits, creating that consistency is key. Doing this in a certain amount of time, but how do we not seem transactional when we're doing this? How do we prioritize our relationships in a way that doesn't seem like we're picking favorites based on who can help us? Or do we do that and just not worry about it?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say one of the key things is that, you know, there are two aspects of that. I think when it comes to not picking people that, you know, may seem that it's all transactional nature, again, you know, we have to think about the goals that we're trying to achieve and who the people are that fit those goals. Now, some people may wash out, right? If you have a past client, for example, that you could tell that they were treating you as a transaction, then great. Maybe that's the person that you choose not to work with. So they get filtered out of your database. They get filtered out of your mind and out of your lists. So I think there's nothing wrong with being able to selectively filter people. The core idea behind prioritization is when it comes to identifying who among our thousands of LinkedIn connections or among the thousands of inbound email connections, or when you're in a room, who do you choose to engage with? You know, we have a tendency as human beings to bring order to the chaos, right? We want to organize the things around us and therefore the people around us. And what we've seen with, you know, years of monitoring usage at Contactually is it's not about organizing those relationships, but instead prioritization. So oftentimes we might think we want to organize people around like important people or very important people. Like, for example, I met Mark Zuckerberg. Okay, therefore he's an important person. I should make sure I maintain a relationship with him. But if I were to instead think about my goals and think about what I'm trying to achieve and prioritize around the people that I believe could, you know, really be helpful around those goals and I can really be able to provide value to as well, you'd come up with a very different list. So that's why we focus on this whole aspect of prioritization, not organization.
I think the key here is also to not forget people that don't have a readily available sort of value add. So one of the things that we talk about in 6-Minute Networking as well, and also on the show here, is that a lot of opportunities are what is called over the horizon, right? So if I meet you somewhere, I'm not like, oh, this guy can help me do something specific. If I find that, then great. Yes, I will follow up. But even if I don't find that, I will still follow up and engage, because since this process is really scalable, and since we've already said we're going to block off an hour, hour and a half a week to focus on this, you can keep in touch with thousands of people regularly. If you're blocking off, let's say 60 to 90 minutes a week and doing this in little gaps, doing the 6-Minute Networking stuff. So you don't have to only decide, oh, I'm only going to follow up with people who can get me a job. You can follow up with everyone. You should not be discounting people because you can't see a readily available sort of transactional value coming back to you. You can focus on the people that you think can help you by maybe following up with them first, or if they demand more of your attention, giving it to them because you see a reason to do this. But you should not be ignoring people or not following up with people based on the idea that you can't see what they can do for you, because that will bite you in the ass.
Yeah, absolutely. Don't get me wrong, right? I don't think that like you should just be like, you know, kind of just robotically saying, will this person help me or not? And kind of, you know, and go, you know, kind of choose to toss people in the wastebasket based on that. Absolutely not. But at the same time, you know, I think where we have to be careful is that we want to prioritize our relationships around the people that, you know, will give us the most energy, not necessarily take it away, or, you know, however you choose to filter it. So yeah, you know, you can have thousands of people that you choose to engage with. Some of them honestly might, you know, you might be, you know, keeping to just like stay in touch on social media and, you know, and being their Facebook friend and, you know, keep, you know, checking in with them once every so often if you see something interesting. Whereas on the opposite end, some of them you're reaching out to every couple months. You know everything about their family. You've gone on trips together. You meet up and really understand what's happening in their business and, you know, how you can help out with them. So yeah, absolutely. Right. I mean, Jordan, you probably even saw this, you know, in your own experience, right? You had some people that you had a loose enough relationship where they were like, hey, yeah, listen, you know, let me, you know, refer, you know, let me follow your new show and just kind of see what Jordan's up to these days. Whereas some people were, you know, posting on social, emailing everyone in their database saying, hey, Jordan has a new show. Whenever they saw links to your old show, they would email the website owner and say, hey, by the way, Jordan has a new show, go here instead. You know, you had some people that, you know, varied the level of, you know, investment. And that is in part because, you know, you were selective in terms of, you know, who you chose to spend more of your time and more of your attention with around, right?
Yeah, that is true. I did have actually a lot of success with one of the reasons we came back was because of the fan engagement, not just people promoting it who were influencers, but those people who said, hey, mom, that show we always listen to has a new host and we're unsubscribing, but the host we liked went to the Jordan Harbinger show. So here's the new feed. I mean, that happened a lot. And I still get messages where people are like, hey, I was on a boat trip in South Africa and I came back and you're gone. I'm on your new show now. Thank goodness for Google. I mean, I find that all the time. I think a lot of people also struggle with how they add value, not just what am I going to get from other people, but how do I add value to some people? And I've seen a lot, some more effective than others. I was just at a conference for podcasting and somebody literally mailed me like a $5 Starbucks gift card. Super thoughtful, but like kind of, I hate saying this. And if this was you, I appreciate it. And I did say thank you, of course, but it's a little generic. Something more personalized would have actually been better and cheaper.
Yeah. So one of the real challenges here, and this is where it gets really sticky, is that, you know, the whole $5 gift card kind of thing. At the end of the day, like what we're trying to drive is, you know, we're not trying to deliver value per se, you know, alone. You know, if it were value, then yes, I just, you know, literally just open up the mail and just, you know, send everyone $20 on Venmo and say, hey, here you go. Here's value, right? It's really more around the feeling that we're trying to drive. You know, at heart of it, we're all social creatures. So I know most people, you know, we talk around, you know, all right, you know, really understand them and understand their business challenges and understand who can help them and know about their spouse's name and give a gift to them. These are all really, really great things. But let's face it, most of that's really like at a higher, higher level. At core, we're all social creatures. And the core thing we're trying to do is just, hey, show we care, deliver the right feeling. And so I have absolutely no problem if someone, for example, just sends me a quick text message saying, hey, Svi, just thinking about you. That alone is a really valuable experience because I know for that instant, someone truly is thinking about me. And so I think alone, you know, we shouldn't necessarily never engage because we can't figure out the absolute perfect gift to give to someone. It's really thinking about, hey, how do I show that person that I care about them and deliver them some kind of valuable feeling?
You also take notes on people when you meet as well. And I do this as well. I'll take notes on my phone. I also add notes to contacts like has a pet pig. And then when I'm looking at the contact, I'm like, oh yeah, that's so random. I'll ask you about the pig because I'm sure a lot of people do that. The other thing that we do also cherry picking from 6 Minute Networking here is the social media engagement or opportunistic engagement is more like it. David Burke has taught us this in the show. And essentially what this means is, look, if someone has a new baby or gets a new pet or goes on a vacation, we see that in our social media feeds, Facebook, Instagram, whatever. Most people will click like, other people will leave a comment. Instead of doing that, send that person an email or a text. It makes it through that social media filter, which people like me just can't even really check a lot of the time anymore because there's too much noise to the signal. There's too many emojis to the actual words half the time. But if somebody shoots me a text and it's like, wow, your trip to Africa looked amazing, that's the person who's getting a conversation. I'll remember that. I'm not going to have the same level of intimacy with somebody who commented on Facebook, wow, this trip looked amazing. That's more of a thanks, man, or I click like on that comment, we're done. It doesn't turn into a conversation. So don't be afraid to jump away from the place that reminded you, that opportunistic place, because that news feed is doing the sifting for you. It's showing you people in your life who are having important things happen, generally, sometimes not, but it's showing you those people's life events. Don't feel the need to only reply on that same platform, right? Let the platform do the work and then jump into their email, give them a call, shoot them a text.
Yeah, I mean, there are a number of basic tricks that I think, you know, you can allow you to differentiate yourself. So you're right, switching channels, you know, and differentiating yourself by channel is really important. Like, that's why, like, one of the weird things that, you know, a lot of, you know, really, like, you know, really top users of ours requested very early on that we finally built out was handwritten cards. And we're like, really? People send handwritten cards? But I get probably like 3 or 4 a week, and it makes such a bigger impact than just like, yeah, yet another Facebook message or, you know, yet another email, right? Not to say that, yeah, you know, those are bad per se, but if you're trying to stand out, there are different levels. One of the other tricks that we also recommend is time shifting too. So for example, when you see someone change jobs, well, of course, everyone's, you know, you're almost like predetermined on LinkedIn to like, oh, open LinkedIn, see a new job. There's a button that literally says, I don't have to type anything, that says congratulate them on the new job, and that's it. Well, instead, well, why don't you put a note in your calendar for 30 days from now to say, hey, check in with them. It's been 30 days. And when you do even small little things like that, that take like, you know, 30 seconds more, that can make such a bigger difference because you're now standing out from the crowd and building a real relationship. That's why I hate to say, I hate the idea of holiday cards, right? Yes, I think sometimes, yeah, you just need to do it as a baseline. But, you know, instead of sending out yet another holiday gift or yet another, you know, card that just goes in the pile at the office, you know, be the person that, you know, the, you know, a week before Valentine's Day, email out your entire network locally and say, hey, I got reservations, you know, 6 months ago at all these top restaurants. You know, do you want any of these reservations, you know, in case you forgot about them, right? Small little things like that can go a huge, huge way and not cost more, not take too much more time, but really show that value in a very unique way.
I hate to say it, but whenever I get something handwritten, I always open it. I always read it. I thought this was like the dumbest idea in the world. And maybe it is if it gets overused, but I am in touch with a ton of people. And frankly, I don't get that much handwritten stuff. I really don't. And some people really shine through because they'll send that and they're like, hey, my kid drew you. And I'm like, oh my gosh, it's terrible. Right. But, you know, it's still up on the fridge or on the bookshelf. It's kind of funny. I also want to implore people. Look, if you're taking notes on people, that's great. You need to put these things in a database. You need to organize your contacts in a database. I know we're a little biased because, see, you've started Contactually, and we'll link to that in the show notes because that's what I recommend. But look, if you don't want to buy that, I get it. Google Docs, Airtable, something. You do not use paper. Do not just have some note on your phone with people. Eventually, it'll get so big, you'll stop using it. And then you'll either have to stop using it entirely or you'll have to digitize it, which you just won't do because it'll take you like 4 hours and you won't want to do it. So start now and keep it digital. Just trust me on this one.
Yeah. And that goes to the whole idea, like, you know, one of the key parts of the capital strategy in the book is the L is for leverage. And it's how do you give yourself, like, how do you increase the likelihood that you're going to do things later on by giving yourself leverage? So yeah, listen, I actually know a lot of really great people that don't need to take notes, you know, that don't need to, you know, keep track of who they're talking to because they have, you know, that, you know, amazing brain. They have, like, I think it's called highly superior autobiographical memory, right? You know, they're able to just remember all these amazing things so they can just, you know, reach out to people, you know, that they haven't spoken to in 6 years and act like they spoke to them last week. You know, most of us aren't like that. And so, you know, yeah, you know, if a piece of paper really works for you and you're able to make that work, awesome. But yeah, most of us, you know, aren't that effective with that. And so that's where, you know, even an Excel spreadsheet or, you know, Evernote or, you know, a CRM can really come into play. And that's why one of the best tips that I've ever received from one of our customers when we were talking around note-taking is, he literally told a room of Contactually users to have a small bladder. And that's kind of a little weird, but like, you know, when he kind of went on to explain it, you know, he was saying that, hey, you know, the next time you're at a dinner or cocktail party or, you know, or something where there's a lot of different people, you know, after every conversation, you know, find some way of breaking away and kind of going off to the side. And it can be as easy enough as saying, hey, sorry, I have to run to the bathroom. You know, step to the side and take notes about everything that you just heard. And yeah, sure. Some people may think, oh, wow, something's really wrong with Jordan. But, you know, you're out there taking notes and that becomes incredibly useful fodder, right? You know, most of us completely forget, you know, the small talk around what they're doing with their kids that weekend or the traffic on the way here or, you know, what they're, you know, or you know, what annoyed them that morning. But capturing those small little things, you know, those are the keys to that really allow you to build a deeper and a more authentic relationship.
I will say just take notes right there and say, hang on, I'm taking a quick note. I want to remember the name of your pig. Hang on, I'm taking a quick note. I always want to put people's kids' names in my phone so that I don't forget later and have to ask you 10 times. Like it's better to do that than to go to the bathroom 14 times in a conversation.
Yeah, there's definitely, you know, yeah, you may want to not be the go to extreme of running to the bathroom 14 times, but yeah, the thing we have to be careful about is we always want to be present in conversations. And so, yeah, that is actually, I hate to say, where like a piece of paper may work. Like when I'm meeting with my employees, I notice it's very different if I'm taking notes on a computer versus taking notes on a notepad. Because if I'm taking notes on a notepad, like they can clearly see what I'm writing and clearly see, okay, they're taking notes from the conversation. If I have my laptop up in front of them, they're like, oh, he could just be, you know, checking Slack or, you know, checking sports scores or something like that. So you do want to make sure you're present in some way.
I agree. Whenever you're writing on paper, you will look like you're taking notes on the conversation. Whenever you're writing on your phone, you look like you're texting. And whenever you're on your laptop, you just look like Gmail, for sure. So I agree with you there. I love the idea of having a small bladder. Zvi, we are up on time. I really appreciate you coming out, teaching us about networking, because this is the core skill that saved my business, saved my butt. I really enjoy doing it now, finally, after, I don't know, 12 years of doing it. And it's just changed everything for me. And I think if people dedicate literally 6 minutes a day to doing this, it's an absolute life-changing type of thing. And so thank you for this. Thank you for the book. And thank you for making Contactually, which helps the process flow in the meantime.
Thank you so much for your support over the years. It's always great to connect with you because I feel like I'm not talking about anything brand new or different. So, and thanks for your 6 minute course.
You got it. Thank you. Big thank you to Zvi Band. The book title is Success in Your Sphere: Leverage the Power of Relationships to Achieve Your Business Goals. Normally, I don't do business-related shows, but I really love this networking topic. It is near and dear to my heart and is extremely powerful, as we've seen in the last year, just firsthand. And if you want to know how I manage my network, create the systems, create tiny habits, use and leverage Contactually, among other drills and exercises, check out our 6 minute networking course, which is free, over at jordanharbinger.com/course. Now, the problem, if you're going to do it later, which I hear all the time, I'm just so busy right now. Oh, I'm getting shiny object syndrome. I got to do this. The problem with kicking the can down the road, you can't make up for lost time when it comes to relationships and networking. So yeah, you're busy with your school, your career, your whatever right now. Doesn't matter. If you postpone this, you do not dig the well before you're thirsty. And I get emails like this all the time. I never did that. And look at this bind I'm in now. And it's sort of hard to feel that much sympathy when people say they've been listening for a year and they're in this bind. It's like, well, you knew better. Once you need relationships, you're too late. The drills take a few minutes per day. This is the stuff I wish I knew 10, 15 years ago. It is absolutely crucial. And it's all at jordanharbinger.com/course. Speaking of building relationships, tell me your number one takeaway here from Zvi. I'm at Jordan Harbinger on both Twitter and Instagram. The show is produced in association with Podcast One, and this episode was co-produced by Jason 6 Degrees of Separation, DeFilippo, and Jen Harbinger. Show notes and worksheets are by Robert Fogarty. I'm your host, Jordan Harbinger. Remember, we rise by lifting others. So the fee for this show is that you share it with friends when you find something useful, which certainly should be in this episode. So please share the show with those you love and even those you don't. In the meantime, do your best to apply what you hear on the show so you can live what you listen. And we'll see you next time. A lot of people ask me what shows I recommend, and one show that I love is called Mind Pump. You guys have heard me talk about it before. I've been on there. Those guys have been on my show a bunch. We're friends back from San Jose. And one of their episodes recently that I thought was really interesting was John Brankus. This is episode 955. You probably know him as the sports science guy. I'm sitting here with Sal from Mind Pump. Tell us a little bit about that. This guy was really articulate, first of all, TV guy, but he also brought up an interesting idea, which is that men and women should actually be put together in sports, which I kind of thought, how's he going to get his way out of this one?
Oh, I thought I would for sure. I was 100% disagreed with him, but he gets on the show and he makes an extremely compelling case, and he explains how in certain athletic endeavors, women compete right alongside with men, especially endurance type sports. And also how boys and girls, if you let them compete together at a young age, it just elevates the performance of the girls. And at the highest, highest, highest levels, when you're talking about professional athletes, that's the 1% of the 1%. You know, comparing yourself to those people, doesn't matter if they're men or women, they're nothing like us. So really, it's about the sports at large, allowing men and women and boys and girls to compete together, giving girls and men and women the opportunity to compete at higher levels, and of course, giving men the opportunity to compete against women in real ways.
You know, it's almost, we're so Californian'd out right now that I'm like, oh, he said if we put women together, they're going to raise their game to the level of men or something like that. But it's like, there's also these biological facts that we kind of can't dispute that like guys are strong. But when you're young, girls are better at everything.
They are. And not only that, but the case he makes is, you're right, men are physiologically stronger than women. However, with a lot of sports, although strength plays a role, it's not the ultimate role. For example, at the highest levels of golf, and you, if you look at how far they can drive the ball, you don't need to be able to drive it super far. You just need to be able to have a certain level of performance, and all the female competitors at that level can do so. Now, if we're talking professional football, that might be a little different, but not all sports are like that. And so he makes a very compelling case, and trust me, I was totally opposed to this idea, and he almost convinced me. So you have to listen to the episode and hear what he said.
You guys can find that Mind Pump episode 955. Of course, we'll link to it in the show notes as well. Thanks, Sal.